Will be from Proverbs chapter 5, verses 1 through 14. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Turn your ear to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. For the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths wander aimlessly, but she does not know it. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near that door of her house, lest you lose your honor to others and your dignity to the one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich the house of another. At the end of your life you will groan, when your flesh and body are spent. You will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or turn my ear to my instructors. And I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people.
There's an outline in the bulletin if you would like to follow along. And if you'll answer them all and then hand it in to me, I'll grade it. And if you flunk, I offer a free counseling session just in case you... No, it's just for your convenience, but I just wanted to call your attention to it. Ha! Listen to that. It worked. When God came looking for Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, shortly after creation was completed, in Genesis 3, or sometime after it was completed, don't really know how much time elapsed, Adam and Eve were hiding. And God obviously knew where they were, but he called out, where are you? And Adam piped up and said, well, I heard you coming, so I hid myself because I was naked. And God said, who told you you were naked? And what did Adam say? Then God said, you know, did you eat of the fruit of which I had instructed you not to eat? And Adam's response to that was, the woman you gave to be with me, she gave it to me and I ate. So Adam's first response was, it's not my fault. First of all, God, it might be your fault. And secondly, it's her fault. And so God then turns to Eve and says, what have you done? And what did Eve say? The serpent deceived me and I ate. So it's the serpent's fault, according to Eve. So from the very beginning of life, the first two people on the face of the earth, they attempt to blame someone else for their shortcomings, for their failures. And this, what it's called today, is this victim mentality, which is so rampant in our society today. People are always looking for someone or something to blame for their failures. They're not very many people anymore. It's hard to find people who are willing to take responsibility for their own problems. I once read that Hall of Fame quarterback Joe Montana of the 49ers would always accept the blame. He would always take responsibility when a play did not go right. No matter what happened, no matter who actually caused the problem, he would always say it was his fault. You know, in a divorce, it always seems to be the other spouse's fault. We've become an overly litigious society where people are ready to sue someone at the drop of a hat because it's their fault. Recently, Kim, my wife, was involved in a minor traffic accident up here at the corner of Spring Road and College. And she was sitting there and somebody rear-ended her. And after the police report was filed, we didn't know this, but that becomes public knowledge. Several days later, she began getting calls from attorneys, getting letters in the mail from attorneys, chiropractors, and everything, wanting to help her get what she deserved, you know, for her injuries, which there weren't any. Even our children learn victim mentality. How often has the child said, well, Billy hit me and I wasn't doing anything? Right, right. For the past few weeks, if you haven't been here, we've been examining the deformation of character in Proverbs based on an article by Glenn Pemberton, who is Dr. Glenn Pemberton, is a professor at Old Testament and Hebrew at Abilene Christian University. And he broke it down into four stages, willingly admitting that there may be more, but these were the four that he broke it down. Stage one of the deformation of character is periodic foolish behavior. According to Proverbs 15:22, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Stage two, when a person deforms to stage two, is where folly becomes sport or becomes fun and desirable. Proverbs 15:21, folly is a joy to him who lacks sense. And then if they progress even farther, or I guess degress even farther, stage three is when he or she is beyond correction, because they literally hate at this point wisdom. They hate knowledge. Proverbs 1:22, how long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? And so this morning we're going to examine the last stage, stage four, which Pemberton has described as collapse and rage. Proverbs 3:35 teaches the wise will inherit honor, but fools get disgrace. A few years ago, you might remember the Navy scandal that occurred as a result of a Navy captain by the name of, ironically, Owen Honors, who was relieved of his command because he was responsible for producing some inappropriate videos while serving as executive officer on the aircraft USS Enterprise. And he engaged, obviously, in very foolish behavior, which, you know, and as a result, he disgraced himself. He lost his position. He disgraced his family. And he proves, basically, the truth of the proverb, fools get disgrace. And if you've been following the news recently, you've heard names like Anthony Weiner and Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey, and those are just the ones that we hear about who have done things that have disgraced, have involved themselves in some foolish behavior that has disgraced them. Proverbs explains in a number of places what happens to those who choose not to fear and respect God. Proverbs 1:29-32 is kind of one of those, and it reads, since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. So basically, you know, the fool destroys himself because he or she won't heed correction or counsel. They will not listen to God. Proverbs 10, verse 21, the lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of sense. So disgrace and ruin and destruction are the end results of a fool's life. And the sad truth of all this is that wisdom is, you know, is not that difficult to find. Yes, one must make an effort to find it, as we talked about last week. But Proverbs 1:20-21 reads, out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. On top of the wall, she cries out. At the city gate, she makes her speech. And so the author is saying, wisdom's out there. Knowledge is out there. You can find it. You just, you know, you got to keep your eyes and your ears open. It's there. You know, you think about it. You can't go very many places in our country and not see a church building. I mean, there are church buildings in just about every community in this country. And in larger communities, there are numbers of church buildings. If you ever go to Memphis, they're on just about every corner. Church buildings remind us of God. You know, we have a church right next door to us, in fact. And not only that, but almost everyone owns a Bible. Is there anyone in here, well, that doesn't own a Bible? And if you don't want to admit that, that's okay. But, I mean, I can't believe that everyone in here, I'm sure, has a Bible at home. Or at least access to one. And it's the top-selling book of all time. I mean, no other book even comes close. That doesn't even take into account all the commentaries written on all the books of the Bible and all the biblical topics that are written on Bible subjects. Glad you made it back. It's good to see you. So there are no excuses for obtaining wisdom, because it can be found if you make an effort. Proverbs is saying that a person's character first begins to deform into a fool when he or she shows no fear or respect for God, which leads to ignoring discipline and knowledge that is discoverable, which leads down a road to ruin and disgrace. In other words, you destroy your own life. You think about that. That is so very sad. But one of the more foolish and personally destructive behaviors, according to Proverbs, is sexual immorality. Proverbs 5, 8 through 10, a father is warning his son about the adulterous woman. You heard it read a moment ago. And he advises him, or them, depending on what translation you have, saying, "Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you lose your honor to others and your dignity to one who is cruel, lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enriches the house of another." Did you hear all those losses in those verses in regard to sexual immorality? He mentions honor. He mentions dignity. He mentions wealth. I mean, it's a losing proposition. And the saddest part of that is these are not taken away from you. You give them away. Verse 9 in the ESV reads, "You give your honor to others." You're giving your dignity away. You're giving your wealth away when you engage in that kind of activity. Immoral activity. It's the same with people who are hooked on drugs or alcohol or tobacco or even food. You give away your good health and you exchange it for poor health. In some cases, you give away not only your health but also your wealth, and you exchange it for poverty. According to one commentator, the loss of one's health may refer to a sexually transmitted disease. The loss of wealth may refer to the cost of her services or having to pay child support because of the resulting broken marriage. How many of you, I already know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How many of you would go out and buy a brand new car and drive it to a junkyard and trade it for a wreck? That's one in every crowd. I mean, that's absurd, right? I mean, no one in their right mind would do that. But that's kind of what you're doing in regard to sexual immorality. I mean, you give away something that is very valuable and you exchange it for something that's worthless. You know, you need to have more respect not only for God but for your own life than to do that. Proverbs 6:32, "A man who commits adultery has no sense. Whoever does so destroys himself." When you think about King David and how his adulterous relationship with Bathsheba impacted the remaining years of his life, then you begin to see the truth of these proverbs. 2 Samuel 12:10, this is what the Lord said to David after the prophet Nathan revealed to David his sin of adultery with Bathsheba. "Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against you out of your own house." So as a result of David's adultery, there will always be strife in his family. And here are a few examples. David's son Amnon raped his half-sister Tamar. David's son Amnon was then murdered by David's other son Absalom. Absalom attempted to steal the kingdom away from David, causing David and his family to have to leave Jerusalem. Absalom then raped David's wives and concubines in public. Absalom was then killed, David's son, by Joab, the commander of David's army. All of this occurred because of one act of adultery, which illustrates the losses and the turmoil that occur as it relates to the foolishness of sexual immorality. And when these losses occur, in other words, when the life of the fool has reached this stage, stage four, and his life is ruined, what does he do? He blames everyone but himself. He plays the victim card. Proverbs 19:3, when a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against the Lord. The fool doesn't consider that his own ways ruined him, but instead he blames God. I mean, how many times have you talked to somebody who blames God for their problems? You see this in the book of Revelation 2, chapter 11, verse 16, when John describes the vision of God's wrath being poured out on the earth because of the sins of the people. And it reads, "People gnawed their tongues in agony and cursed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores." They cursed the God of heaven. But they refused to repent of what they had done. You know, fools just don't get it. You know, because their character has deformed to such a degree that they're incapable of admitting that they are the real cause of their problems. In Isaiah chapter 8, the Lord communicated to Isaiah the punishment that he was going to send on Israel because of their sins. So God told Isaiah, he just probably was giving him a warning, this is how the people were going to react, Isaiah. Chapter 8, verse 21. "They'll pass through the land, greatly distressed and hungry, and when they're hungry, they will be enraged, and they will speak contemptuously against their king and their God." They'll blame God. When the fool has ruined his life, that's what he does. He often blames God. You know, what do insurance companies typically call weather-related disasters? Act of God, right? They blame it on God. And that's changing, though, now that climate change has become popular. The climate change enthusiasts aren't really blaming God anymore. It's your fault. It's your fault now. And I'm not taking a stand on that. I have no clue where that is. I'm just telling you what they do. Only at the end of a fool's life, when it's too late, does he acknowledge his mistake. Proverbs 5, 7 through 10, you heard it. The father warned his son about the adulteress, as we read, and indicated that if you don't avoid her, all of these losses will occur, and then you will say, verse 12 through 14, "How I hated discipline. How my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or turn my ear to my instructors, and I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people." So to use a very worn out phrase, please don't go there. Brian Judge once said, and I'm not sure who Brian Judge is, but Brian Judge once said, "Something you need most might be something you turn away from. Something you turn away from might be something you regret. And something you regret, in the end, might cost you the one chance you ever had." You know, no one really makes a conscious choice to become a fool. At least I haven't met anybody that does. If a person, however, turns away from seeking moral wisdom, if they turn away from God, if they have no fear of the Lord and choose not to listen to His Word, he or she may possibly become a fool. Similarly, a parent who does not try to shape a child's character through training and discipline will possibly become the parent of a fool. You know, fortunately, the deformation process is gradual. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. The path can be altered prior to stage four. And even stage four may not be the absolute final stage, and there may be a glimmer of hope for change, but the chances are decreased significantly. Your communication card, which I hope you still have in your hand, if you have one, it has three next steps on the back. Memorize Proverbs 6:32. A man who commits adultery has no sense. Whoever does so destroys himself. And then read Proverbs 5:7-14 and take the responsibility challenge. When something doesn't go right in your life, don't seek someone to blame. Be an adult. Take responsibility for your own problems. You know, one of the beautiful things of knowing God is Jesus did what needed to be done for us. You know, and he certainly did not take the easiest path. While we were still sinners, Jesus died for us. It's a free gift. An incredible gift. There's no gift with the value that this gift has. But you have to choose to accept it. You know, you have to choose to believe and commit yourself to him as your master and savior. And that may bring, as you live your life, that may bring some significant pain to your life. But what is that compared to what waits for us in eternity? It's nothing. As Paul said, those are momentary trials that far outweigh what we're going to have someday, far outweighs the momentary trials we go through in this life. This morning, it is my sincere hope that you will consider, if you haven't done so yet, that you will consider putting your faith in Jesus Christ. That you will consider obeying the gospel this morning if you have not done that. That is my hope. That is my prayer. As we sing the song, make that known. Either come to the front, go back into the back. However, make it known as we stand and sing.